It's Black History Month in Canada and other countries across the world, and as part of our month-long series on Black culture and chronicles here in our part of BC, we're speaking today with a woman of color who grew up right here in Nelson before heading off to a remarkable and genuinely star-studded career in the U.S. Sarah Schnarr, who was biracial, moved here from St. Louis, Missouri, along with her brother Stephen, dad John, and mom Catherine when she was five. She went on to attend Iowa's Drake University on a track scholarship, then Georgetown in Washington, D.C., where she studied media. And from there, she ended up at CNN. Then, I guess we'll let her tell the rest of the story in what will be a rare two-segment conversation with Sarah. She's on the horn with us this morning from her home in Los Angeles. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning. I'm on the horn. I love it. That's a good line. Yeah, I want to use it. I'm on the horn.
That's a Canadianism. You can feel free to use that one.
I love it. As much Canadian as I can spread here in the States.
We want to talk a little bit about your love for Canada and how it differs between here and there. But can you just to give us a rapid-fire idea of what you've done and who you've worked with, we're actually going to just rattle off some names in sort of roughly chronological order. Larry King, Ryan Seacrest, Oprah's network, the Kardashians, who I know you're a little bit behooved to chat about, Arsenio Hall, Steve Harvey, and you lined up talk show guests for all these folks. So you've met hundreds of newsmakers, superstars, business magnates. First off, though, let's go back right to the beginning. What are your memories of growing up here in Nelson?
Oh, man, where do I start? Nelson was the best. You know, I don't think I'd have had the same opportunities if I'd grown up anywhere else. Because Nelson, it provided me with such a solid core of morals and values. It's such a special town. I mean, it's way ahead of its time for a little town. I think, you know, like, we were eating organic food before it was a thing, and now I have to pay, you know, $14 for a fresh juice because it's organic, and they add the word elixir. Like, we were just healthy and clean and happy, and I think, like, most of all, I loved the freedom and safety of just kind of being in Nelson and growing up. You were able to run around, you know, I'd get lost in the woods, camp, explore, swim. You know, it gave me, I think, like, a sense of independence and imagination, which, you know, has really helped, I think, kind of navigating through this craziness of being in the States. And, you know, I have memories of sleeping outside and watching the shooting stars, or what else, skinny dipping in Kootenai Lake or something. I mean, I was just free. Like, I tell my friends here that I was an organic free-range kid, you know. One night I was looking at the stars. Well, it was actually the first night we could see the stars, and there were helicopters flying overhead. And I pointed out a few of the constellations, and my friend was like, "Oh my God, are you an astronomer? How do you know that?" Because I grew up looking at the sky, and I paid attention in elementary school. Like, how do you not know that?
Sarah, speaking of looking at the sky and also being down in the States, you're on the phone with us this morning from Los Angeles. What was it like growing up biracial in a small Canadian town?
You know, well, it didn't really affect my life growing up in Nelson, I have to say, other than, you know, feeling, there were a couple of incidents that I can remember, feeling uncomfortable in grade three when we had to do a family tree and talk about recessive and dominant traits, and of course none of mine matched with my parents. That was an uncomfortable feeling, and then there were maybe like one or two, and that's it. Those are the only kind of memories that sort of affected me, and I didn't have the tools to really figure out what was going on. But, you know, I felt so comfortable in Nelson. You know, my dad, he's been a teacher for so long. I tell this story. It might have been his story he told me, but I think I've just adopted it as my own. So he's been a teacher for 40-plus years, and he's had this family photo on his desk. And I think he said, you know, in all of his years of teaching, nobody said, a kid might have picked up the picture and said, "Oh, are those your kids? Oh, sweet, cute," or whatever. But nobody once said, "Why don't they look like you? Why do they have darker skin?" You know, people just were so much more accepting of people. And, you know, I think the last thing on my mind was ever race, because that just wasn't something that was pointed out. We were all human, and we were all loved, you know, regardless of where we came from or however, skin. Someone could be staring at me, and I'd think, like, do I have broccoli in my teeth, or is there toilet paper hanging out of my butt? No, it's never, oh, gosh, we're adopted. We're black. Look at me. Our parents are white. My brother and I, we just never had that experience. And I mean, I'm blessed for it, but it certainly didn't prepare me for living in the States and having to kind of juggle kind of racial relations in college, running track. It was very divided. I mean, we got a little taste of it when we traveled back to St. Louis to visit our family, because that's when I felt the biggest shift. Lots of stares, you know, people kind of looking back over their shoulder. But again, like, I didn't really understand why. I knew something was different. I just thought people were rude. I just thought Americans were rude. You know, I don't really recall talking about it much, but I know that it felt a little different there. But it was a beautiful, being biracial, it was just, now I'm able to celebrate it, but it was never anything that affected me in a negative way when I was growing up.
Onto your career highlights, there's tons of them, Sarah. Condolences first off on Mr. King's passing. He was a mentor to you, and you could likely fill a number of shows with tales from Larry King Live. But share a bit about how important he was to you and your career, and how long you worked side by side with him.
Oh, Larry. I produced probably close to 3,000 shows with Larry.
Wow.
And I know, isn't it insane? And everyone gave me a new, like, every show that I did would give me a new Larry King tale for the books. There was always something funny, something interesting, something I learned, something that I had to overcome. You know, I was traveling pretty much all over the globe covering breaking news stories. You know, it's a bummer I didn't write it all down, because there were so many funny ones. But Larry was a mentor. He was a friend. He was really, really special to me. You know, I learned from a young age about the art of interview from him. I learned to listen. I learned how to be tenacious. I learned how to be early. Oh, my gosh. Larry was like a clockhead, you know. Time could not come soon enough. He was so impatient. How much longer? When are we starting? What's going on? Like, you know, thank goodness he relied, because he just could not wait. I remember traveling, we'd fly private, and we'd be going from L.A. to New York, and if our call time was 7 a.m., that meant wheels up at 6:30, and he was leaving you, whether you were there or not. He taught me how to get curious about life, how to ask questions, how to read, how to learn. He had this genuine interest in people and life, which I just really valued, and he was insatiable when it came to knowledge. I mean, good for him. The man read everything. He watched every sport. He watched every movie. He was so well-informed. I mean, maybe Bill Maher gave him a close, you know, gave him a run for his money, because that's another man that I thought was always very, very smart, very well-informed. But Larry he was just so curious, and I respected him so much, as did everyone. And I think because of that, he had, like, this direct line to everyone, you know? His name carried a lot of weight.
No doubt.
It made booking not as difficult. Well, I work for Larry King, and they'd be like, oh, great, versus, you know, a local channel that might be on the ground for a breaking news story.
Speaking of booking, Sarah, let's play a quick name-dropping game here. Can you rattle off, like, just off the top of your mind, some of the biggest and boldest personalities you cross paths with while lining up guests for the show?
Now you're on the spot, eh? It's so, like, I have to tell one funny story. So I was, actually there's so many, but I was with some friends. I was out in L.A., I was visiting some buddies, and I went to the washroom. I left my BlackBerry at the time on the table. And when I came back, I saw my friends, and they were, like, looking as if, oh, gosh, we're going to get in trouble. I'm like, what did you do? And I grabbed my phone, and I looked at the call log, and it's, like, Jay-Z, I think they called Jay-Z, Snoop, who else did they call? Bill Clinton. They just, like, were scrolling, calling people. And then I heard this, hello, hello? And they'd call Larry. And, of course, Larry was the only person that picked up. I think they invited him over for beers or something. But the Beatles was a big one. Of course, minus John Lennon and George Harrison. Mm-hmm. Jay-Z, Beyonce. Prince was a big one before he died, about 6 months before he died. Kobe Bryant, I'd have to interview him several times. That was lovely, because I'd have to go into the locker room and, you know, stare at a lot of big black men. Sidney Poitier, beautiful, beautiful man. I really respected that interview I got to do with him, and I received an NAACP nomination for that. It's Dalai Lama, Madonna. Oh, gosh, that was a terrible one. I got I was super nervous trying to put a microphone on her.
Uh-huh.
Actually, not her, on her husband. It was her and Guy Ritchie. And my ring got stuck on his chest hair. And it was, she didn't love that. Michael Jackson, God, that's probably the biggest, strangest, but most incredible person I've met. Nancy Reagan, Snoop, Mick Jagger, ooh, that was a good one. Well,
you could probably just why don't you just send us up your BlackBerry and we could probably line up some guests for about the next 5 years.
But you know the difference with that show? Like one night it would be President Ahmadinejad, the Iranian president. And yep. Then the next day it's like Britney Spears who shaves her head. So you never got bored because it was tabloidy, but then it was newsworthy, and then it would be breaking news, and then it would be some exclusive, and then it would be a fluff story like UFOs, which, good grief, they sent me to Stephenville, Texas to report on UFO sightings, and nobody had teeth in that town. I mean, it's like everything is just a bizarre story. You know, imagine getting thrown into some new city or country, and you're just like, here I am, one-way ticket, and you just kind of got to figure it out. Figure out the players, figure out the story, get savvy and talk to, you know, try to book, but also try to keep, you know, be sympathetic. And it was a lot. It was such an incredible time in my life, I got to say.
More incredible tales to come. We'll take a quick break. If you've tuned in, we are in the midst of our series on Black History Month, and we've been speaking with Sarah Schnerr, who is biracial and moved here from the States way back in the day, and now is living down in L.A. and meeting all sorts of interesting people. We'll come back for the second bit of our chat with Sarah right after this break.
Day is nearly done. A darker gray is breaking through a lighter one. A thousand sharpened elbows in the underground. That hollow, hurried sound. The feet on polished floor. And in the dollar store, the clerk is closing up and counting loonies, trying not to say, I hate Winnipeg. The driver checks the mirror 7 minutes late. The crowded rider's restlessness enunciates. Guess who sucked? The Jets were lousy anyway. The same route every day. And in the turning lane, someone stalled again. He's talking to himself and hears the price of gas repeat his phrase, I hate Winnipeg. All leaning into sky, a golden business boy will watch the north end die and sing, I love this town.
Hi, I'm Ian. You're listening to Kootenai Coop Radio, Nelson, BC.
Take two.
Roll it.
Yeah, go ahead.
I gotta center myself. Hi, I'm Ian from Come On, and you're listening to Kootenai Coop Radio, Nelson, BC.
Woo! I'm Jake Sherman.
And I'm Darren Davidson.
And this is Kootenai Morning.
Well, we're in the midst of a two-part conversation with Sarah Schnarr from Los Angeles, a former Nelson gal born and raised. Sarah, wanted to ask you a little bit about your time with Oprah. Is there another woman in America who has been more influential in the past few decades, and why so?
Good question. I don't think so. Hands down, she is larger than life, certainly a cultural icon, and, you know, mad respect. She's someone who's, you know, managed to infiltrate American life in so many ways, and, you know, I really appreciate that. The thing, like, with her as well, like, I respect her authenticity. You know, yes, I mean, people will say she's got a big ego, but the woman gives so much back. And we're not even aware of all of her private charities, the grants that she gives to support education for women. You know, we don't always hear about that. But for her to allow the world to kind of know her story, a black woman from Mississippi, you know, which had a huge impact on her life and who she is to this day. And I think it's one of the many reasons she's able to connect with so many people in a way that really gets to the heart of what it means to be human and a woman and a black woman. You know, you look past her weight and you look past the color of her skin. You look past her sex and you really listen to her. And, you know, by watching these stories of other people, I think, you know, they're lifted and encouraged and inspired. She's magical, you know. I mean, not to mention she's like the nation's first self-made African-American female billionaire, something like that.
Mm-hmm,
but she's a really, you know, she's a powerful woman. When she walks into the room, you stand up a little straighter, you know, you get a little nervous. When I was working on a show called It's Not You, It's Men, which was hosted by Rev Run of Run DMC and
right on.
Singer Tyrese. Yeah, he was mad cool. Oh, my God, he just sat there with his legs crossed on the chair, and he was wearing his tracksuits and his Adidas running shoes. I loved him. He was awesome. And then Tyrese Gibson was the other host, and every day there'd just be that slight chance, is Oprah going to come in? Is Oprah going to come in? And by like month five, I was like, screw this. She's not coming in, and I just want to be comfortable. And I wore flip-flops one day. Running out the door, I'd worked out, I had flip-flops. Who comes in first day of meeting her boss, Oprah? And it's like, hello, and everybody has to like run up, and she's hugging people, and I just didn't want to leave my desk because I'm in flip-flops. And she goes, I go, hi, nice to meet you. I'm one of your guest producers. I'm Sarah. And she's like, hello. And she just kind of looks big, and then she looks down at my feet, and then she just looks back up at me and then, you know, kept it moving and talked to us. I was like, oh, shoot. I'm going to be forever the girl that wore flip-flops to, like, my meeting with the boss. Oh.
Good way to make a first impression.
Well, right?
Well, Sarah.
Lesson learned.
Sarah,
now I just bring the flip-flops in my purse. Yes.
Sarah, we don't get too many phone calls from L.A. here in Little Nelson, but is Hollywood as savage as it's often made out to be, or is showbiz actually full of decent folks concerned about their fellow professionals' best career interests?
Well, it's nutty. I'm not going to lie. It's a bit of a mess. It can be, but I think, you know, there's definitely some savage aspects to it for sure. You know, if you really want to break it down, there's, you know, you can get into all the harrowing accounts of like harassment and abuse in the film industry and so many other painful subjects, you know, that have been really hidden and kind of dismissed. The Me Too movement. There's a lot that's, you know, really kind of pushing for change. But I think, you know, for the most part, a lot of stuff gets printed because it reads juicier. A lot of stuff gets made, like, you know, just because there's a lot of money to be made in it. But the majority of the people are hardworking professionals. And, you know, talk of change within the industry has shifted the pendulum, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still a lot of work required, but it's not, you hear of the crazy stories. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's not as bad. But I do think you got to have a thick skin, man. You can't take things so personally because it really isn't about you. And as I've learned, this is one of the biggest lessons. Rejection is redirection. I view it that way.
That's a good way to look at it.
And I also, it is, right? And it's a positive way. It's almost like taking charge of your life. It's redirection. So now where do I go? And how can I be better? And I also have learned how people react and, you know, some real rude, mean, inconsiderate, disrespectful people. And I used to take it personally and it would sort of chip away at my soul every day and kind of make me sad. And I remember thinking, do I even want to live here? Can I hack this? Why aren't people human? Why aren't we nice? Why aren't we treating people with kindness? But as I've learned, people's reaction has nothing to do about, you know, with you. It has everything to do with themselves. So if I'm on set and someone's a real dick, I just kind of try to breathe and go, it's not about you. It's whatever he's got going on. And that has really helped a lot. But you have to have those tools. You have to really just know that it's tough. It's a grind, and there's a lot of people out here. Little people with big dreams. And I say that because actors are 5'6", 5'7".
Sarah, we've really enjoyed talking to you. We are running out of time, which is too bad. We wanted to ask you a little bit about the Kardashian episodes and your time on The Bachelor. There's another fellow we had on the show on Monday who has received a call from The Bachelor. He lives down in Trail. Wanted to ask you for some advice.
Yes!
Also wanted to touch on Joe Biden and COVID, but sure enough, we've run right out of time. So it just has been a real thrill and a real joy to chat with you. And as we talked about off air, maybe this is time for Kootenai Morning's first LA showbiz correspondent. Maybe we got a reason to call you back.
Yes. Darren, you know how fired up I am? This felt like 2 minutes of talk time. I'm like, who else wants to talk? I want to run outside and just like talk to anybody that wants to listen.
Well,
I have a lot to say, and it's so fun to share. And I feel very grateful for you. You've been really good to me over the years, and I'm proud to say that I'm Canadian, and I'm especially proud to have grown up in Nelson, and it's a light that keeps shining in me as I live in the States and figure out a way to get back home to Nelson when I can.
Well, we sure hope to see you live in studio next time we talk to you. Good luck with everything going on down there with the political change, and it's been tough in California and COVID, but it sounds like you're hanging tight, but we do got a roll. So all the best to you, Sarah.
You too. Thanks so much, guys. Thanks for your time,
Sarah.
Have a wonderful rest of the week.
You too. That's Sarah Schneer as part of our series on Black History Month. We've been speaking with her. She's biracial, moved here from the U.S., and has had a heck of a career.